It's happening again. Welcome to Work Cookie, a CBOC podcast. As we broadcast around the world, get bite-sized morsels and tidbits from our industrial organizational psychologists, other experts, and the latest research on the workplace to boost your organization's effectiveness. Sign up now at CBOC.com. That's SEBOC.com to engage with our community, gain a sense of belonging, access our other media, and get rapid advice from our experts at CBOC.com.
Welcome. I'm Dr. Jeremy Lookabaugh, Industrial Organizational Psychology Consultant and Workplace Communication and Negotiation Coach. Also, we have Tom Bradshaw with us, a voice and speech coach and a damn good actor, too. He is the official voice and speech coach for the industrial organizational psychology community.
Hello and welcome to Work Cookie, our weekly gathering of HRs, IOs, recruiters, and one actor as we try to make the world of work just a little bit better. And today, Linda Ann, you're going to lead our discussion, and we're going to continue talking about pro-social and pro bono work. But today we're going to talk about some of the challenges and triumphs and navigating this whole field. So I'm sure there's lots of great stories we're going to hear today, but why don't you kick us off?
So I did drop a couple of articles in there. And you'll have to get the sightings from the articles themselves. I didn't have a minute to get that together. But really, it's about today we're looking at the challenges and the triumphs. Let me start with the triumphs first. You know, pro-social, and I'm going to focus more a little bit on the pro-social behavior and that within the workforce. And please pitch in different perspectives, examples, all of that kind of stuff today, because I could use a little bit of education on this as well. And so to share your experiences would be wonderful. Looking at the pro-social behavior, however, are really things that are, number one, they're altruistic and discretionary, right? And so it's really those things that many organizations aspire to have their employees behave and exhibit those behaviors, such as, you know, helping, collaborating, being cooperative, supporting each other, taking on a little extra role or taking on some extra work and contributing to the team in that way. Those kind of civic behaviors that you see within an organization and among people when you're all pitching in and working as a team and so forth. On the downside of that is something that I think we need to figure out, how do we balance, right? In my experience, some of the challenges have been overcompensation. You know, when someone is especially not carrying their weight, you've got other people pitching in and making sure that whatever it needs to get done gets done. And I think that especially in larger organizations, and they don't have to be huge, but some larger organizations where some of that lack of performance goes unnoticed and other people are picking up the slack, can really long-term be problematic, because the person who's picking up, or people who are picking up that slack, tend to get frustrated, have burnout, and some other levels of dissatisfaction. So, and another thing is, if those environments exist, sometimes people will pick up the roles that they like from the other person who's not doing it and not necessarily complete all their own roles, right? So now you've got a real dilemma. They're being cooperative and helpful and all those kinds of things, but they're not performing on the things that they're supposed to do. It's kind of like they're out of their lane. And then the other thing that, and I've seen this, and it was definitely a frustration, is there was one particular person who was the head of a department, and he was not a top performer, let's put it that way. And everybody, a lot of people were picking up the slack in a number of different roles, right? And then because that was his lack of performance was invisible, he was being lifted up, right? And being provided with growth opportunities, promotions, things like that. And that, talk about creating some discord and some frustration within the organization. existed. And so how do you handle that? So I would love to throw some of that out for comment and feedback and input.
And oh, look, Martha, Dr. Martha, glad to have you back, Martha. Let's go to you.
Thank you, Tom. I'm excited to see you too. So there's a lot that is going on there. There are certain people who simply lack the focus to do their own thing. And as Linda Ann mentioned, maybe if they're picking up the slack for someone else, whether that's because they are trying to help or because they can't stay on task with their own work, they tend to lose focus. And what needs to get done kind of gets done, but not really. And that can become problematic. If others are chipping in for someone who is unable to perform for whatever reason, whether you're shorthanded on a team or whatever the reason is, the difference of in how it turns out really depends an awful lot on personalities and the integrity of the people involved. For example, if you have a team, whether you're a team leader or not, if you have a team that is willingly chipping in to help you, whether you asked for it or not, you have to, as a person of integrity, acknowledge that. You have to let the powers that be know that, so that we don't have the example, like Linda Ann said, this one person was getting all the opportunities as though he was competent, when in fact somebody else or a group of people were really helping him to some degree. So it all comes back to that. You have to look at the integrity of the people involved, because I think generally speaking, if you look at people, they are willing to lend a hand. They want to help out when help is needed. They're interested in the collective success of the group, but there is a limit. They probably have a limit at which point they will say, I won't be taken advantage of, or I'm not going to do somebody else's work, or I'm not going to do the work for which someone else takes the recognition and whatever other perks may come with it. So there's so much to it. And I think leadership in general and the company culture can certainly help to affect that, to influence that. If you have leadership that leads by example, I think other people are much more likely to follow in those footsteps. I myself have in the past had wonderful, wonderful teams that I've been managing. People who would step up and help out without me asking them. I would purposely not ask them because I don't want them to be overtaxed, overworked, and eventually burnt out, but they would still pitch in. And you better believe that I would tell anybody and everybody about how wonderful these people are and what a wonderful team is. And let's make it worth their time and let's find some relief to the extra work that they're doing. So this is critical. Organizations have to be very much upfront and very much aware of what's going on. If you have leaders who are indifferent and I say leaders, but I mean leaders and managers who are indifferent or who are ignorant of what's going on, then you're leaving things up to chance. And then things go in whichever way the wind blows. But if you try to set an example and try to mold the culture and the workplace experience in such a way that when people do step up, they receive the accolades and the recognition and whatever else is appropriate, then you're building the kind of workplace, I think, that everybody can enjoy and benefit from.
Do you have any sense of how close we are to that type of environment, that type of culture and organizations? Are we struggling out there in the real world, or are we getting close?
It really depends on the organization and its culture, because in every organization, regardless of the culture, you will have some good apples and some bad apples, right? So if you have a group of people that is generally really great folks, it's not uncommon for there to be one grumpy one or one that's looking to take advantage or to do as little as possible. It happens. On the other hand, if you have a culture of naysayers and whatever else, you may very well have those well-meaning souls who will either win people over and bring them to their side, or whose souls will be crushed and then they'll go somewhere else. That's a sad reality. But, you know, it really does depend on the organization. And even if an organization's culture is not ideal and not where we would like it to be, it doesn't have to stay that way. Change is possible. It will require time and effort, but it is doable.
Well, I hope you write that book. I will be the first one to buy a copy.
All right. I'll put you down.
Excellent. Lee, let's go to you.
Man, there is so much to unpack on this. Woo. And because this, you know, I mean, I, you know, kind of the basis of our conversation is, you know, with the pro bono social whatever. But this is a common problem in general. What Dr. G was talking about, and Lynn Dan talking about, you know, the person who's not carrying their weight and other people are propping them up and, you know, they're getting the accolades or whatever. I mean, that's just that's a problem in business and organizations in general. I mean, that just is. You're just adding an extra layer when that person is the, I don't know, social chairman or something, and they're getting, they did this great employee dinner. They did this great volunteer event. They did blah, 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 blah. And so you're just adding a whole other level of that. And so many organizations these days, they're trying to up their social score, basically. And so they're wanting to be philanthropic in some way. So we're going to volunteer. We're going to do these things, you know, whatever. And, you know, that's great. But does your organizational culture actually support it and structure? And do you have the communication that's really required to make this work? You know, because to make this really work, the people at the top have got to be paying attention. Because if you've got the, you know, self-declared social coordinator or whatever who's doing everything except their work, you kind of need to know. And you really don't want to have to count on somebody, you know, doing the proverbial throw them under the bus, because that in itself has its own problems, because now you've got bad feelings and whatever else. Oh, you can't trust so-and-so because he told her. So there's lots. I mean, trying to do good could destroy your organization if you don't do it correctly, which is hugely ironic. But and then there are things like, okay, so the organization says, okay, we want to be the socially conscious group and we're going to encourage volunteerism as long as it doesn't, you know, affect your daily work. So if you take off to go do this charity event, make sure you make up your hours. Okay, now we're getting some mixed signals. And, you know, I actually did some work for a contract thing where it was like, okay, you have to have your number of billable hours. And so if you want to go do this, you have to make up those hours or take PTO or, well, I mean, that's not really following the spirit of what you're wanting me to do if you're telling me I've got to do it on my own. But repping you while I'm doing it on my own, sounds like I should be getting some PR money there. And, you know, because now I'm in marketing. But so you really have to make sure that your organization will support this. So if you're going to do this, you've got to be clearly communicated. You've got to put some guardrails in and, you know, okay, here's an opportunity for you to go and, you know, the company is going to support this opportunity to go and volunteer. And you can go for up to, I don't know, 4 hours, let's say, and have that count as part of your workday. You know, you can do these things and you can encourage this. And it's a bonus for the people because they, you know, get a little time away from work. They get some camaraderie. They get that warm fuzzy of helping people, you know, and I can remember in the Navy that we would do stuff like that. And it was one of those things where, okay, here's an opportunity for us to go do something, whether it's a volunteer event or a social event or whatever. And the caveat was you will be at said event or you will be at work. You know, you don't get to use this as free time off and not do either. You have to, you know, you still have the obligation. And so, you know, you have to make that. And there are organizations out there that actually, I mean, I know a lady works for a bank here locally. She gets to spend a week volunteering for the a day camp for the Cub Scouts every year, and it's paid. You know, they just give her a week of pay to do this every year. And that's just a company benefit that they give them. which is fantastic. Some companies do that. And my company has a volunteer award. You can log your hours volunteering, and not only will they honor you, but under certain circumstances, they will also give a small grant to the people that you volunteered so many hours with. So, that's great. So, but again, it comes back to, you have to be very, very clear in your communication and your expectations, and make sure that people know that volunteering is volunteering. That's not your job. Unless, you're one of those people who has the title of volunteer coordinator, and then, rave on. But, so.
Lee, let me ask you, do you think we need a new dictionary? Because I'm noticing a lot of sort of feel-good statements are sort of being put out there. We're going to be socially relevant. Well, what does that mean? I was talking to someone not too long ago who mentioned that their organization wanted to become an employer of choice. And so I said to them, well, what does that mean to you? And that's kind of where the conversation ended. So do we need a clearer understanding of, what these phrases that we're now incorporating into the vernacular actually mean?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. And so many of these phrases, I mean, they were created on LinkedIn or social media or whatever. I mean, think of all the things we know. Employer of choice. What does that mean? Does that mean your employees don't quit? I mean, what does that mean? Does that mean you put a job thing out and you get 1,000 applicants because everybody wants to work for you? I mean, what does that mean? Quiet quitting. You assume it means one thing, but it really kind of means something else. We really have to be clear on what these things are. Much more than just fodder for us to write articles on and, share our brilliance out there in the world. But you're so right that, if it's open to interpretation, then it doesn't really mean much.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure someone wrote a blog about this somewhere. I'll just have to do some research. Linda Ann, let's go back to you.
There's a couple of points to what Lee was speaking to. I've encouraged organizations to include volunteer days in their benefits. So, for example, when I worked for an architecture firm, people would naturally go ahead and work with Habitat for Humanity. And so they would also, and that was a benefit to them and our organization, because, they were an architect working or an engineer working at Habitat for Humanity, and all these other volunteers were working there. And there was this a little bit of a discord because they were taking vacation days to go work in a situation that benefited, both the volunteer organization and the organization. So, it's not in any of the articles I posted today, but there is data out there that shows there's real benefit to return on investment to providing those volunteer days. So we added 2 volunteer days per year for people to go volunteer at the organization of their choice. And, contributed to that, pro bono, pro social kind of mindset, and was supported by the actions of that. Now, when you're talking about an employer of choice, to me, that means that people ask to come work for you. You don't have to put that job posting out. The people are not leaving regularly, because whatever you're doing is working. And because it's a healthy environment, a supportive environment that creates professional development, all those kinds of things, then people tend to want to work for you. They want to choose to work for you. And that creates that employer of choice mentality. My question for the group here today, though, is how do we strike that balance between encouraging the pro-social behaviors that are all those things that we work hard for in organizational effectiveness, right? Getting the teams to work, getting the cooperative attitudes, getting all of those kinds of things implemented and part of your culture, and create and or maintain the boundaries that you need so that you're not getting this bleed over that is detrimental.
Thank you very much for that. Nick, let's go over to you.
Yeah, it's an interesting idea to think that you can do too much of a good thing. But when we're talking in an organizational setting, you've got to keep kind of keep the focus on the main thing. Why is the organization there? Yes, you know, when we talk about what is the social responsibility of organizations, yeah, volunteer days are great. You've got your banner going out into the community and investing where they are. But if you forget about, you know, the widgets that you need to make or the service that you need to provide, then you've kind of lost the backing to be able to do all these other, I don't want to call them secondary things, but the social, the pro-social things. If you don't have the ammunition to fund those through paid days off or anything like that, all of that community good goes kind of out the window. And it's real easy to forget that, you know, oh no, I have a job to do here, but because I like coming to work, because they do care about the communities that they're in, because they allow us to do this, that, and the other. You know, talk about a volunteer day, you know, giving people the chance to kind of vote with their feet and say, I support this organization. So they have the autonomy to do that. And maybe that's some of the, you know, psychological safety that an organization can provide that doesn't necessarily come from the job specifically. So I think that there's, you know, that tension of, well, we have to focus on why we're here, but we also have to remember that we live in this community and we want to, you know, make it a better place for the people who live there as well.
Thank you very much for that, Nick. Dr. Martha, let's go back to you.
This is so interesting what Nick said about having that balance and the ability to do those socially responsible types of things. But, you know, it's always been so interesting to me when you look at different organizations, how some are very much involved, engaged in interacting with the community in which they are located. And one of the ways that company can do that is through things like volunteering or having their employees volunteer. Whereas other companies are completely disengaged from the community. They have no contacts with anyone. It's strictly business. Nothing is done for the benefit of others. It's as though they exist in a bubble. So it's always been fascinating to me how there can be, and of course there's companies in between, but it's fascinating to me how there are companies out there who are so completely disengaged with the community in which they're located. So if an organization is going to engage in any of these socially responsible types of behaviors, I agree with Nick. You need to be able to take care of your business first before you go do the extras. However, having said that, we must remember that you don't have to do huge things to start with. You can start small. It doesn't have to be $1 million in grants or in man hours. It can be something small. Focus on the community. Who are the people? Who are the other businesses? What's the environment like? Some of you are old enough to know that there were companies out there polluting everything to death where they were, only to up and leave, leaving the people of that community to clean up for decades afterwards. And that was very real. And I think that's still real in other countries where the laws and regulations are not as strict as what we have here in the United States. But that's incredibly socially irresponsible. That's not thinking about anybody other than yourself. So when you as an organization are looking to be a contributor to the community rather than just be there and providing jobs, yes, I understand that some can argue that, well, we're contributing to the community by providing jobs. That's only part of it. You can do more and you can start small. If you're asking your employees, or let's say offering, whatever your delusion may be, your employees the opportunity to volunteer as a representative of the organization, please do not ask them to do that on their own time. If individuals do things on their own time, it's in their own name for their own interest. If an organization wishes to be represented in the community as an entity that does good for others, then allow your people to do that on company time. Again, it doesn't mean that a company can afford to give someone a week off. I love that example. That was wonderful. But not every company may be able to do that. but they may be able to give someone a day off or half a day, and you're getting the organization engaged with the community. Only good things can come when we're engaged with the community around us. Not only do you get to know people, but the community becomes real and the organization becomes more real to the community. We're neighbors. We're in the same area. We're using the same roads and the same stores. And it just makes everything that much more of a community. So I think it's hugely important, but it has to be done right.
We definitely need more organizations which are just good neighbors. Thank you very much for that. Lee, let's go back to you.
You know, she brings a very, very good point about the, you know, being a part of your community and everything. And the interesting thing about this is the spectrum. You know, because, you know, the old saying goes, it's amazing what you can get done when you don't care who gets credit. So, you know, some companies will use it as a PR thing. And if they've got the money and whatever else, I mean, it may be part of their PR budget. But you can just put it into your policy that says you get, you know, what Linda's aunt thing, two days of volunteer time on, you know, on the books. Great. No requirement. You take those days, you know, maybe you bring me a flyer or something if you really want to know that you're not just fishing. But that kind of goes back to the company culture. And we've talked about this before about making your employees into advocates, because I may not require you to wear a t-shirt that says you work for XYZ Corp. Maybe you choose to, or somebody says, hey, it's great that you're on. They go, oh yeah, you know, my company, they gave me the time to off to do this. Oh, wow. Did you hear that XYZ gives time off to do that? Now word of mouth. So now we're getting this PR that we did nothing for other than we gave an employee some time to do something on the clock and we supported it. You know, and it goes from that all the way up to, I mean, my wife's organization throws huge money out. They support, you know, local music and, you know, festivals and whatever else that it's a major driver to these things to actually be able to happen because they put this capital out there. And there's a big banner with their name on it, you know, supported by, you know, main sponsor of, you know, whatever. So great. You know, they throw $1 million at it. They probably should be able to put a banner up. But the fact is that they still, you know, there's a banner over in the corner, but they put that out there for the community to be able to do that. You know, huge sponsor of the local, the big local theater in Memphis that brings in, you know, countless music and whatever else, sponsor several music series. That's awesome. And, you know, yeah, they get some PR out of it, but the community benefits from that because of the cultural opportunities that they provide that, you know, these organizations might not have the funding to do otherwise. So you've got that full spectrum all the way across the board. And it could be as little as I'm essentially giving you two extra days of, you know, paid time off to do volunteering, which, you know, across all of your employees might be pretty penny, but it's not as much as throwing a $1 million at a music series. And so you've got that spectrum that you can do. And if you're just giving people with, you know, you could do stuff where you have, you know, a group will go and we're going to represent our employer. We're going to go like the St. Jude Marathon here. They have groups that will come in and volunteer and do an aid station along the marathon route. And they all, you know, they put a big banner, says who they are, and they wear t-shirts or whatever. But in the end, what people notice is that they're out there going, woo, you know, and supporting really an amazing organization and event, but they do that as a group and they provide that service and they, you know, and, you know, even though it's on a weekend, but the company provides, you know, them refreshments and all the stuff for it and whatever else. So there's, you know, there's this whole spectrum of things that you can do.
I'm going to rehearse the first show right now. I think you need to connect me with your wife and her organization. talking to them later. Thank you very much, Lee. Alexander, nice to see you again. Let's pop over to you.
Nice to see you too. All right. So I am going to take this from a couple of viewpoints. One, as a business owner, and then two, thinking about our future generations that's coming into work. Next year, they're going to be about 30% of our workforce. That's not a small amount. A lot of them want to stay at companies, and I hear a lot of chatter anymore about companies wanting employees to stay for a long time. The question is, are those companies worth staying for at a long time? I think companies need to really start asking themselves those questions. A lot of companies, yeah, they'll say that you can take the time off or something, but they want you to not get paid for it. They want you to do it on your own time. These things, it's really a smart way to be able to do it, very much like App on Google have. You let the people decide what they're going to choose to take their time off for and volunteer. You pay them for the time as if it was a working day. It gives them control over the situation, makes them feel empowered to be able to make those choices. You don't have to plaster your company name over it. Another great way to handle it is if they choose to do it on the weekends, write the check as if you were paying for those working hours. Say, here, we're going to give this charity that you want to volunteer for the hours that we would have paid you. There's a donation to them. For companies themselves, you typically do want to kind of control who you're publicly donating to. So you can be able to start to do, we're going to do a natural check to this company. It'll be an official thing. But for our workforce, we're giving you time to volunteer to places that are important to you as an individual and a part of our greater community. There's really easy ways to do this. And if you do want employees to actually stay a long time instead of just saying that, you really start have to think about how are you going to attract those people to stay. And this is one of those great ways to start doing it.
I agree with you 100%, Alexander, but I have noticed that, you know, as the number of employees available sort of cycles, you know, all of a sudden there's no employees, we can't hire anybody, to like, oh, we've got 10 people for every position. A lot of those sort of social issues and, you know, allowing employees to do things like this, they become hot topics. And yes, we include them because we really need employees. But once we're full, they seem to disappear. So is it important for those organizations to maintain that once they've started?
Yeah, you have to build this a part of your culture. That's really what this is. If you're investing in your community, that should be a part of your long-term culture. You're not in your community just when you choose to be. You're in it long-term, regardless of whether or not you want to pretend that that's the reality or not. Your reputation is in that community when you're there and when you leave. How you're going to interact with that community and how you're going to treat the people that are your employees of that community is really going to be beneficial to you. And you really have to start making smarter decisions for a lot of companies.
Yeah, be smart. Thank you very much for that, Alexander. Linda Ann, back to you.
So two points. One, when we talk about pro-social behavior, pro bono behavior, it's not just, you know, outside in the community, it's within the organization as well. And one of those, an example of that is one, in one situation, we had an employee whose spouse was very ill and was going through treatment. And so the entire organization set up, you know, the meal plan for how every day who was signed up to bring in dinner so that they didn't have to worry about getting dinner on the table for the kids or preparing that or even thinking about what was going to happen. There were 2 to 3 weeks when that was just, you know, invisible for them. It just happened. And so that's what I consider that pro-social behavior within the organization. The other thing that I, and so fostering that and having people feel like they want to do that for each other is an important element in that culture. And if people don't do that, that's something to take note of as a leader, that is not going on. And because that speaks loudly as well. The other thing also is when you're talking about, you know, as Alexander had mentioned, you know, doing things that makes employees want to stay with you, because that's the trend. I know that the pendulum is swinging on that, is really, and I've gotten on this soapbox before, and I know Alexander can help me with this, is the certified B Corp situation. That is an outline for success in pro bono, pro-social behavior. And it focuses on those ethical aspects of how you function as an organization, in addition to how you're perceived in the community and in your industry and all those kinds of things. And it addresses areas like governance, ethics, transparency, workers. One of the things it tackles is, you know, the financial security of your workers. And are they being paid well enough? And are they being educated on finances and their financial health. You know, of course, there's the diversity and inclusion, civic engagement, but the environmental responsibility, customers, how do you, are you a good steward of your customers? And to the generational aspect of things, one of the keys, especially, you know, I look at leadership and the generational impact that leaders have. And if you look at the Native American philosophy, their philosophy is that any decision that you make, you have to consider the impact for seven generations. So, next.
Yeah, I think there's a lot we can learn from indigenous cultures. And that's one of the really good ones. Jacqueline, let's go to you.
Hi there. I've been thinking of two things as we've been having this conversation that I feel like has been said, and I'd like to kind of tie a bow around it, is one, starting at the beginning with the company and the company strategy, the vision, what is this company on the planet for? And many times it's a for-profit company, but what not-for-profit items are aligned? What can we use that profit to do in the world that's aligned with what we're on the planet for? And so really, when you can start at the beginning in that way and get that alignment, and then you're attracting your employees in who are aligned with that vision that you have established at the beginning, one might say that those the pro bono, the initiatives that we're trying to do aside from our day jobs are more likely to be aligned. And that brings me to the second point, that so much of this is all about engagement. Lee gave us this, he gave me a visual of employees going out and rallying and being excited. That is employee engagement. And when they're out there, whether they're wearing the t-shirt or not, what are they saying about the organization as they're getting out in the community can speak volumes. And so we talk about the tenure and how long employees are going to stay combined with what they're saying in the community. So much just comes back to, are our employees engaged? And all of these things that we've been talking about have so much to do with, are they happy at work? Are they engaged in their jobs? And do they want to represent the company in a way that you would want them to be representing you and your company?
You know, Jacqueline, as you were talking, I kind of a thought came to my head, because if we're going to have organizations go out and do, you know, good work, it usually comes from the profits, which usually go to the shareholders. Should organizations be engaging with shareholders to talk about the social activities that the organization should be undertaking?
I do think so. And I think there's been some discussion about, well, attracting employees and keeping employees, well, people will also do the same with their dollars. If I think about what's in my stock portfolio, I'm more inclined to invest in companies who are doing good in the world, whether it's they're doing good and making a profit, whether it's they've taken some of the profits and put it towards causes. I'm more inclined to give my dollars to the companies, just like Alexander was saying, an employee is more inclined to stay, you know, when they've got their house in order. I'm sorry, Alexander, I'm probably not representing what you said perfectly there, but I think we get where I'm going with that.
And thank you very much for that. Nick, let's go to you.
Something that jumped out to me while Alexander was speaking, you know, we talk about this as a strategy, as, you know, a way to get something good for the company. And like so many tools that we talk about in this field, it can be used as a genuine piece of what the organization is and what the culture is, but it can also be used as a gimmick. And I think there's some jadedness in the back of my mind that goes, well, you can say it's, you know, a community service day, but, you know, is it projects that we want to work on or anything like that? And there's oftentimes where, yeah, when hiring is tight, people start pulling out some of these stops to say, well, look at what we do here and look what we do here, and here's another benefit. And then once the bus is full, they say, well, we're not really going to do that anymore. And there's enough of a bait and switch that happens out there, or even programs that were poorly implemented. I'm not even going to put malicious intent out there, you know, just to say that it doesn't go right. And so it has to be a genuine part of the culture you're striving to be. It has to be sincere, or people are going to see through it very quickly.
Agreed. Rich, good to see you again. Let's go over to you.
Good to see you as well. Linda Ann kind of opened up my Pandora's box, if you will. So I heard a lot of talk about the community and external factors when it came into this pro-social behavior within the workplace. But in my eyes, and what I see a lot is internal to an organization, right? And it's the simple little things that we might not think a lot of, whether that's a leader recognizing a gap in knowledge or in processing or some kind of onboarding and taking it upon themselves to kind of bridge that gap and going a bit above their responsibilities to kind of do what they need to benefit either an individual, a small group, or the organization as a whole. The one thing I wanted to add as a caveat, when we see that internally, because I see it a lot with employees that I work with across this, like the sides and the departments, is boundary setting. There has to be some kind of boundary setting or accountability from their leaders to recognize when somebody may be volunteering their time way too much. And then either calling it like it is and being like, hey, that's enough. You have to kind of rein back in. Or for yourself, understanding this is way too much for me to take on right now. I need to calm it down and then I can get back to it later if that's the case that may be. But it could be something as simple as you just helping out a coworker in another department that you see struggling, and you're just opening up your expertise and your time to help them through whatever they need help with. But she brought in that individual aspect, and that's what I've been thinking about a lot as we've been going through these conversations, not so much externally, but that internal factor as well.
Do we have to be a little cautious, Rich? Because I know I've seen lots of situations where leadership goes, oh, you can do more? Well, we'll just ask you to do even more. And it just builds and builds and builds.
Hopefully the culture, the environment, and the trust within the teams that you create, and as a leader yourself, you're holding those boundaries for yourself and others, and you're looking out for the well-being. Yes, there are always going to be those people that want to take advantage, but hopefully they get called out as well, or you as the one being taken advantage of, realize it and say something.
Oh, those are difficult conversations. Alexander, let's go back to you.
So I appreciate Lyndon and bringing in the Native American aspect as someone who's Cherokee and Lenape. I'm going to touch on those B Corp aspects because that's near and dear to my heart. Green energy is such an aspect of that. You've got the environmental aspects that are very key for businesses nowadays. Now, if you're very much into dealing with banks or looking at financial terms, which I think if you're a business owner right now, you're probably very heavily thinking about that debt maturity wall right now. And you're probably looking into those things. Companies that are B Corp are getting better financing terms than companies that aren't. Banks are reporting that in their own documentations right now. So there's a really good reason to actually be looking at this for a long-term cultural change. Those companies actually stuck to this, they're getting better financing terms right now than the companies who aren't taking those aspects really seriously on the long term. Now, let's push that even further into our employment aspect, because that costs a lot of money for our employees. 33% of Gen Z within the UK, according to a KPMG report, said that they're actually not taking job offers. They're turning job offers down from companies who they didn't like their green energy aspects. So we've got 33% of, you know, employees who are losing talent because of just their green energy stance. Another aspect is that same poll from KPMG found 92% of Gen Z prefers companies with values and purpose that matters extremely highly to them. If you're looking forward, which you should be, then your company is really going to have to start taking these stances more seriously.
Yeah, they just announced this up here in Canada. There are now more millennials than baby boomers. So maybe the world is going to change. Dr. Martha, let's go back to you.
So this is very interesting what Alexander just said in the generational differences of what people as employees are expecting. And going back to what you asked, Tom, about shareholders, I think most of us, if not all of us, have probably heard of a company that has made a decision that maybe made the general public cringe because their first responsibility was to the shareholders. And I understand that people will buy stocks and invest in businesses and companies to a certain degree to mirror their own social responsibility, if you will. But there is still plenty of that happening for strictly financial reasons. And if a shareholder, especially a large shareholder, cannot see beyond just the immediate profit in terms of longevity of the organization and its relationship with its community or communities, then such short-sightedness may affect the organization and their abilities to truly partner with the environment, the communities in which they exist. So that's something to consider. Shareholders can be a tricky bunch for an organization to deal with.
Yeah, they certainly can at the best of times. Thank you very much for that. Gabby, let's go to you.
Hi, I am really enjoying this conversation. And Alexander, what you said, Jacqueline, I think right now it's an exciting time to start thinking, how can we stay relevant? And when I'm listening to all of these different factors of, being a company where people want to work here and being a company that's going to keep the talent that we want to attract, what are we going to do? And I think for me, the first thing that came to mind was, what are our policies look like? Like, are they updated? Do they represent what we want to be and what we want to offer? And can we take a step back and kind of go back to that self-accountability of, what can I do to make sure that we're moving in the right place, in the right direction towards the future? Because I think that new generational, all of the things that are coming and all the new younger people coming in, I think it's super exciting because it's really aligning all the things that personally I think are important. Like, what are we doing for this planet? Like Jacqueline was mentioning, what are we standing for? What are our values? And is this really community focused? Are we really being true to what we want to communicate out there when we have our banner outside those events? Like, are we really about this? And now this new generation is coming in and saying, I want to feel like I'm actually making a difference. Like, I don't want to just say, oh, I'm working for this company. Now I want to say I'm working because it's what I want to do, it's where I want to be, because it's not just for a paycheck, it's because it's bringing meaning to my life. And it's almost like that's kind of the vibe that's becoming more and more relevant with the new, or at least what I've noticed from the new generation. So it's an exciting time for this field. And it's just an exciting time for the companies that want to take that step further a little bit and say, hey, let's really, you know, step it up. And maybe we don't have to keep doing what we've been doing, because it doesn't really, you know, at this point with this new world we're living in, it doesn't make a difference. So, yeah.
Let me ask you, because, you know, I'm old and I've seen a lot. And do you think we're going to see a change in leadership with a new generation coming in where, you know, leaders of my generation, if you're a CEO, you're focused on profit. You know, that's what the company's all about. You know, we're a business. We have one priority, make money. But do you think we're going to see a change in leadership style, a change in leadership with leaders asking those type of questions?
I think with now we're able to see that we can combine those things. Like, it can be about the bottom line and making a difference. We can create a balance, and it is possible. And I think there's been some sort of mentality of it has to be only about the profit. And I think with the newer generation and newer perspectives and the research, I think we can say, well, yeah, we definitely need the profit. That's what a business is about. You know, otherwise we wouldn't have a business. We wouldn't have the kind of economy that we have. But we can definitely add this other context under this other layer of, let's be responsible. Just because we're making money doesn't mean that we have to be socially irresponsible and justify our actions. And I think new leadership can bring that perspective. And it goes back to what Dr. G was mentioning earlier. It's that self-accountability of saying, let's look inward and what kind of leader do I want to be and what's working? Because again, the new generation is going to come in and say, it's not all about the money. And then what do you do with that? If people are saying, I don't want to work with you because you don't align with my values, then we're going to be forced to change all of these things that have been happening, which is a really good thing.
I think there's another book. That one's on you, Gabby. Linda Ann, let's go to you.
So I want to emphasize how important it is to really consider the social environmental aspect of your organization and how important that is to lay groundwork now, because we've been talking about millennials and Gen Zs for so long that millennials are in their 40s, right? We're going to be talking about millennials retiring soon, right? Gen Zs are almost 30. So we need to be, and they're focused on, you know, they make decisions based on, are you a certified B Corp? What are you doing in the environment? What is your social stance? They make decisions about who do they want when they're in the job search. They will target those companies first. And then if you look at Gen Alpha, the next generation, they're starting high school. And we'll be hiring those in less than 10 years. And their focus on the environment and social responsibility and all those kinds of things is even greater because they were raised by the millennials or the Gen Zs, right? So really, and when you think how long it takes for an organization to change its stance or its mindset or its culture to embrace that, they need to do it now.
Amen. Lee, let's go to you.
Well, I know we're running short on time, so I'm going to make this quick, but I got two things. One, something that you know, I think it was Gabby that really made ping is that, you know, if you really want to approach this on a financial thing, you know, there's an old adage that you've got to spend money to make money. And so what are some of the things that organizations spend money on? Well, they spend on advertising and PR and all these kind of things. You know, if you really just want to, even if you're not minded in that way, all people are. I mean, let's just face it. We all have different ways our brain works and we have different focuses. If you're looking at this from a business standpoint, it's an investment. So if I spend some of our capital on, you know, these opportunities to support the community and whatnot, that's an investment. That's actually PR. That's actually marketing. If you want to look, if you're not going to think of it in philanthropic terms, it is a business decision. It is a business investment, and it can pay dividends. Because even if it's not so much you, if you're talking to your employees, you know what's important to them, you can kind of go, you know, I may not really care, but, you know, all these people that keep making my wickets care. So in that sense, I care. So, I mean, you can do these things from a business standpoint without it and still do the good. So, I mean, that's just... I just want to put that out there that you don't have to be in that, you know, particular thing to still serve the people that your business serves. And then the second thing is, if you really want to do, if you're wondering out there how you get started with this stuff, you know, kind of to Linda Ann and Rich's point, that it starts at home. So if you really want to know, how do I get my business to be more in this stuff? I don't have $1 million to throw at something. I don't have a whole lot of stuff. Well, then, you know, are you taking care of your employees? Are you doing an employee appreciation lunch? Are you sending flowers when an employee loses a family member? Are you sending food? You know, I mean, I can't tell you. I mean, many of us have lost people in our lives, and how much did it mean when a meal shows up that I don't have to think about it? And there's little things that you can do like that, starting at home, to take care of your people and to make your culture a better place, and a place that your employees want to be and are proud to be a part of, because you have started at home, and then it can work out from there. And then you can, you know, how can we take this beyond that? Okay, we've improved our culture. We have improved how we take care of our people. Our people are, you know, we've created this thing. Now what's the next step to move on to the other thing? because, I mean, let's face it, if you go big, you know, I know we all say go big or go home, but if you go big out the gate, you're probably going to go home too. So, you know, start it small and take your steps and be intentional about what you're doing.
Sorry, Alexander, back to you.
I'm going to build off of kind of what Gabby said and hopefully partially answer one of your questions, Tom. And that is this kind of a choice at this point? And I don't think it is. I forget which company it was. I think it was PwC. 90% of executives think their companies won't be financially viable within the next 10 years. That's a pretty significant aspect of it. But if we start thinking about this from younger generations, and Linda's pointed out too, they're not as young as we kind of tend to think they are, I don't think. You have to think about people aren't being able to afford their homes. 50% of people aged 18 to 29 don't live anywhere. They kind of just live with their parents. You have a drastic reduction in the amount of people who are having kids. Then you go even further. You look at recent pollings have showed that 50% of the U.S. population thinks we're going to have a civil war within the next 5 years. There's a lot of aspects here. The decision's been made, really, for these companies. It's just, are they going to adapt to the new realities? Because the new realities are just money, the salaries that we're getting right now. They're not going to be a reason to really work there. You have to provide more at this point. Just enough people aren't being able to pay for what they have to do with the cars that cost hundreds and thousands of dollars now. Housing, I think Miami is currently at over about 70% of a person's income goes just to rent right now. Mm. You know, we can't just sustain at this level, just here's our salary. You have to start bringing value in other areas.
Let me ask you, Alexander, too. It's kind of along the same vein, but when people looking for employment are looking at organizations and their social responsibility, do they have to sometimes be cautious that organizations aren't whitewashing? I heard a story that, you know, there was an organization who was planting trees, you know, to compensate for their carbon footprint. And then when people dug a little deeper, it turned out they were planting trees in a private game reserve of which the CEO was a member.
Yeah, you do. They need to be open, honest, transparent. They have to actually show that this means something to them. Otherwise, how can you gauge it? It's just like a business decision. If you can't actually measure how good of a investment this is or what return this is doing, how committed is this vendor to actually providing cybersecurity so our customers' data isn't leaked and now we have to pay these aspects? It's the same business decisions. You've got to treat your employees or prospective employees like another business partner because they are.
Thank you for that. And I hope the entire world sees it like that. Linda Ann, once again, our hour is up. Another great discussion. Thank you very much for leading us in that discussion. Some final thoughts.
I just appreciate everybody's input and the collaborative effort that was made to make this a success today.
And thank you very much to all those of you who did contribute today. We do have more events coming up. I see, Lee, that you've got one of your virtual IO psychology mixers coming up. You want to tell us a little bit about that and what goes on?
Yeah, sure. The typically Thursday evenings at 6:30 Eastern time, we gather together in a virtual room and we just have conversations. We have chats. We give updates for people who, parts of the community who come back again and again, and we love to celebrate the wins and all that kind of stuff and just get to know each other better and share resources and just a good time.
And if you're listening to the Work Cookie podcast, you can find all this information on the events page at cboc.com, including Keeping the Drive Alive, our monthly post 3-day event gathering. My goodness, I'll have to talk to Jeremy because I'm sure there's another 3-day event coming up this summer as well. And Dr. Martha, remind us where we can find you on YouTube and your podcast.
My YouTube channel is called Stress Free with Dr. G, and you can find videos that focus on stress management on there, but also the video version of my podcast, Workplace Psychology with Dr. Martha Greidick, and the audio version is available on all of the major platforms.
And it is definitely worth your time to check those out. So thank you once again, everyone. Linda Ann, if you'd like to count us out, we'll see everyone back here in 1 week's time.
Thanks, everyone. 3, 2, 1. See you next week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Work Cookie, a CBOK podcast. Don't forget to sign up at CBOK.com. That's SEBOC.com to engage with our community, gain a sense of belonging, access our other media, and get rapid advice from experts. Would it be a bad idea to make your most challenging workplace problems go away? At CBOK.com.